Hey, welcome back, everyone. August 15, 2025, 2 o'clock p.m. on the Clemenson appeal. At this point, Mr. Clemenson is still questioning Mr. Heacock. So, Mr. Heacock, I see you're probably back. So, just get your video back on and audio, and we can get restarted again. There he is. Okay, go ahead,
Let's
Mr. Clemenson.
see. Okay. Oh, there we go. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to share my screen again. Actually,
You've
let's
got your
share.
whole desktop, Mr. Clemenson, at this
Yeah,
point.
I'm trying to figure out what it was doing to me there. I want to make sure you guys can see it because I have received the feedback that you guys might be having a hard time seeing some of these emails. And so I want to make sure that I'm blowing them up as big as possible for all you guys. Okay. All right. All right. I think we're a lot of us are at that age where we need to have everything going on. So thanks again, Mr. Heacock. So starting, we're looking at Exhibit A51. This is an email from Scott Diener. Diener. Yeah. Diener. Yeah, man. You know what? I'm going to get this right eventually. All due respect to Scott, my apologies. In October of 2023, the initial SEPA determination was withdrawn almost immediately. It was issued without a notice of application.
Correct.
Just to clarify, this error was due to the mistaken belief by DCD staff that the permit was an SDAP-1 instead of SDAP-2.
The permit was an SDAP-1. So the
Yes.
process is to issue a SEPA decision. We send that to the interested parties that were aware. There was a large group of people that had already chimed in about the project. So I don't know who it was sent to, the SEPA decision. I have no idea.
Had community members expressed concern to you directly that this should have been handled as a type 2 permit even before this point?
I don't know.
All right, I'm moving on to A57. I'm going to again blow this up for all of our eyes. So this was the email, Mr. Heacock, that you had sent to Mr. Smith and Ms. Olson shortly thereafter. Triggering another step deficiency information request to obtain clarity from the applicants about basic parameters of the proposal, including clearing limits. And there's more context about this in Exhibit A52, but I think this email speaks for itself. Let me know if it doesn't. Were you not comfortable moving forward with the SEPA determination given the uncertainties about the proposal at this time?
Well, it's always best to have a firm grasp on what the ask is and what the site plan is conveying, for sure.
Okay, thanks. Okay, I'm going to pull up A56. And again, I'm going to blow this up. So this was an email Mr. Smith sent to you. Steve, I believe there's a word missing in there. I think Mr. Smith was meaning to put in there. The revised site plan requirement is over the top, doesn't but he does not understand this would help with the permit in the final stage.
No, I want to chat with him. Oh, is that a? Oh, it's something from Mr. Edwards. Oh, I see. Hang on.
Yeah, no, it's
From
I'm referring to the email
November.
at the top. Yeah.
Oh,
My
I see.
questions is
Okay.
during this time in late 2023, early 2024, did the applicants email and call and walk into the DCD in regards to this information request? You know.
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay. Then let me move on to A55. This was an email sent by Mr. Smith to Mr. Edwards and to you.
Oh, Jeff saying that he spoke to me. Okay.
Spoke to Steve after presumably Mr. Smith's conversation with Mr. Edwards at the front counter. Essentially, Mr. Smith is reiterating the things that they need from the applicant here. You know, a clear site plan, clarifying, showing the modified proposal to adjust the road location, prevent storm drainage impacts, omitting the barn. Again, trying to figure out is the easement going to be in there, is the easement not going to be in there. Did you find generally at this point in time that the applicants were resisting providing you revised site plans, even though you and Mr. Smith were advising that they would really be needed to help the permit move forward towards approval?
Well, I think that's a best scenario, isn't it? To have a site plan like that. I don't know what transpired in relation to, next steps, but I think that at that by that time we started getting an understanding of the farm management plan and those things as well, because that was an item for the second review, as I recall. Again, this is
A while.
I'm dealing with some extremely complicated projects within this time frame as well. I can't remember everything.
Okay, understood. So moving to F25. This is an important email that is included as a foundational exhibit, obviously. Not an email. I'm sorry. This is an actual letter submittal. So this was a submittal from the applicant in response to the information request in March 2024.
Oh,
And
okay.
so this is 4 months later. The applicants responded, indicating the site plan was indeed accurate. No adjustments would be made.
Okay.
They also stated the farm plan was not meant to accurately match the site plan.
Okay.
And they indicated also the farm plan would be revised to match the site plan after approval, but before final inspection per their agreement with you.
Oh, okay.
So why was the farm plan revision to wait until after permit approval, but before final inspection?
Well, that would be in relation to implementation of a farm plan. That's pretty typical. As I understood the farm management plan, it's well, being a past farm planner for the Kitsap Conservation District and also working in other jurisdictions for doing farm management plans and being a certified farm planner, it's hard to plan for things that aren't planned yet. So you don't really have an understanding of a farm management plan other than they had provided that planting that I had discussed earlier in a hedgerow planting. So that has a USDA specification for hedgerow planting, which I can't remember the spec number, but it is an actual specification for a hedgerow, and the idea is for protections of buffer areas and things like that. So yeah.
And typically, this case is a little bit unusual, and I think that the KCD identified it too, and that a farm plan is not typically a regulatory document.
Correct.
And so what we're dealing with here is that it becomes a regulatory submittal as part of this permit. And so the concern is it not subject to appeal? In other words, why have it be completed after the fact rather than during the, if it's a regulatory document, then at an earlier point?
Well, first you said we. So a farm plan is, a document between the farmer and the conservation district. So it is indeed a non-regulatory document. What we have done in relation to conditions would be to require the conditions to be met for the site obscuring vegetation, which we did. So it's an added condition. There's a specific specification. We included that specification in the SEPA decision. To me, the farm plan is whether or not Edwards chooses to do farming. We would recommend a farm plan, and we recommended that they get a farm plan because there were statements and features on the site that looked like they would be farm activities. So it's not unusual for Kitsap County to ask a applicant to apply for and seek a farm management plan because the best management practices of a farm management plan may help to identify pasture vegetation or reseeding specification and to provide adequate feed and forage and do a feed forage balance and do all of the analysis for manure management and identify a place for manure management. And deal with mud management so that you have best management practices that then we have a better situation with a someone who's intending to do farming. So that's the nuts and bolts of why we asked for the plan. Again, though, if the applicant chooses not to do farming, that doesn't really, it's not germane to how we're processing SEPA, and it's precisely why I didn't mention that they had to have a farm plan in the SEPA document, because it's all about the impacts, the offsite impacts that were requested by adjacent property owners. So that's why we incorporated the light obscuring revegetation.
So the applicants in this letter, in the little paragraph, and I can't highlight, it's an image. So it's a paragraph that starts with any road. The applicants also make a statement about not alleviating a road encroachment. What did that mean?
Encroachment. I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay. Had there been any discussion with the applicant in any meeting you were attending about simply extending the road to their entrance around the corner to get it off that third-party
All
site?
around the corner. That could be. That may be what
Okay.
they mean. I would ask him. I don't
Okay.
know.
Okay. All right. Okay. Were the SEPA, were the required SEPA buffers included on the site plan at this time as requested?
The revegetation of the wetland, I believe that's on the site plan. I don't know for sure. And I know for sure that we just conditioned, since we understood that there was a SEPA appeal for the matter of the light obscuring and the whole situation with the use of the easement. And the fact is that Edwards, without re, you know, they had indicated they would like to plant vegetation to match the farm management plan, I don't know if it exactly matches, but the condition would be that we would verify that it matched. So, once we, I mean, if we get to the point of this permit being issued, then a condition and an inspection would require that those plantings are in place, on the adjacent north and the adjacent northwest portions as we've conditioned. So those are conditions of approval. They're required conditions per the SEPA decision.
You mentioned earlier it would be best, ideal. I think it might have been the way you put it, if the if these buffers were shown on the site plan. Is that correct?
Yeah, but we have a specification we completely understand. And in fact, I went out there and I looked at the plantings, and at this point, they looked to meet, but I can't do an official inspection until we have an issued permit and that we have a request to have that inspected by an applicant. So, it's just at this point, oh, that's good they did it. To get
Okay.
ahead, but
So in those emails, you're,
yeah, may
I'm
have
sorry.
enhanced, yeah. So
Okay. In the emails we're just looking at involving you and Mr. Smith, there was discussion that the applicant would need to update the clearing limits on the site plan. Were those ever revised, to your knowledge?
I don't recall.
Moving on to A61. Moving forward again, I'm going to increase this.
Oh, okay.
Okay, this is an email that you had sent to Mr. Smith, others at the a whole bunch of colleagues, because there had been discussion about confusion about what the intent of the applicant was. Because Mr. Smith had said, agree with Steve, that's what we discussed. We can render a decision on CEPA quickly with the tweaked site plan. You responded, I'm going out there on Wednesday morning, had a good discussion with them. They have no desire to use more of the easement than is currently noted for access. So at that point in you talked to them, I assume, by phone or in person, and they had indicated that the easement was done at that juncture. What occurred in that conversation that made these documentation changes, in other words, the site map or the site plan changes, no longer required?
I think I don't recall whether or not we had an internal meeting or what. I don't recall. I don't recall why. I think there was a conversation about, hey, we can condition this.
Okay.
And so I think that was the nuts and bolts of it. 'Cause I think the, let's see here, just a second. When that,
Well, I know you guys definitely got there by early summer 2025.
well, and in relation to SEPA as well, because it wasn't soon after this that I issued the SEPA decision, which was March 27th of that same month. So,
Yes.
I did a site visit, and it's like, okay, I think that we had a conversation, but I do not recall. I don't know.
Okay. Have the buffers that you're mentioning, the north and northwest, ever been accurately shown on either the site plan or the farm plan?
A farm plan had a pretty good representation of what we were looking for
Okay.
in relation to site obscuring. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to move on to A27. We're working our way up through time here. This
Oh,
is
and then
later in
maybe when I went out there, I took some photos, possibly.
All right, so this is, you'll recognize one of these files. It's just the kits of notes on a permit. So this is the notes in the permit that are the internal DCD notes. I'm going to skip
Oh.
this. This is 827,
Okay.
a printout from notes all the way to the last page, page 14. Well, maybe not. Page 14 is the second to the last page. So you'll see that Jeff Smith put in a comment here
Oh, okay.
in March. And you and Mr. Smith conducted that site visit, as I understand it, to the applicant's parcel and stated, quote, significant progress has been made towards visual impacts, end quote, in the planning of the buffers along the applicant's driveway.
Okay.
So what were you referring to in regards to the driveway buffer? And did you take any photos of those applicant plantings at the time?
I don't know. I don't know if I took photos or not.
Okay. I'm going to
And
show.
that's Jeff writing that.
Okay.
So,
Okay.
that was, this is a land use matter. And so, this
Okay.
particular permit, I reviewed more environmental issues, obviously performed the SEPA decision. Jeff had reviewed for land use components, that type of thing. Yeah.
Understood. Okay, so we're looking, you'll recognize again, this is the northwest corner of the applicant's parcel, this time looking northward. You'll see behind the gate are young plantings. They're protected by stakes and deer fencing to prevent deer rub. This is A37. Is it possible these were the plantings that you were seeing near the
No,
applicant's entrance? No.
they're adjacent to the fence on the left of the photo, as I recall. And then
Okay.
there were other plantings that were further over,
Okay.
in relation to the kind of the more central north parcel. And I don't know what who that was, but it was somebody that had recently installed a cedar fence, and so they had requested plantings as well. And so maybe Edwards planted additional plants. I don't know.
Okay, this is we're now looking at A62. So when you were referencing these plantings, you're not including these that you saw next to the entrance in what you were referring
No,
to.
that's not their property.
Okay, understood. So I'm going to move on to A64. So this was an email sent from the lead appellant, and I should just say that's myself, to Mr. Smith and to you, indicating that the appellants had noticed, the community group had noticed significant progress, that note, essentially had noticed the note in the
Oh, the
current
note.
form.
Okay.
Yeah, the note that had been added. I'm going to blow this up a
Okay.
little bit more. Our own inspections have determined that the Edwards had appeared to have planted seven trees in the, in that along that area, and we were confused, actually. When this email cut came in, did Mr. Smith confer with you about, what is this guy talking about? Did you guys try to get together and figure out what this was about?
I don't recall.
Okay. Is it possible the plantings you witnessed were located on the neighboring properties?
No.
Okay, so this gets to that the topic. Obviously, what we're seeing in those photos were plantings made by neighbors on the north to the northwest. We had just seen photos of plantings that have been made in response to this clearing. Yeah, can the community be confident, Mr. Heacock, that those protective efforts made by the neighbors were not credited towards your SEPA decision in ways that reduce mitigating requirements on the applicant?
Well, I'll say again and state we have a SEPA decision that requires plantings adjacent to the easement area, whether or not the easement is used or not, as we understand in relation to SEPA and in relation to the project that the applicant has chosen not to enact, construct, whatever you would say, the easement and the easement road. And so it's not part of this proposal. But should it ever be, we had also, through substantive authority, required the plantings for view obscuring, and it will be a matter of inspection. And we will inspect it, and likely there will be a landscaping bond that we would also require to assure that those plantings are well cared for, that they thrive and grow and do their buffer action. So that's in relation to specific comment from adjacent neighbors. And so we only required it specific to the adjacent neighbors. If a neighbor doesn't want plantings, it could be that they don't want the plants to grow up and then be an issue for a light problem that they may have. They might want to have sunlight coming into their property, and that's up to them. That's their prerogative. They were notified. The NOA had sent out a to the 800-foot radius around the entirety of the property, so all of those people had every opportunity to provide comments to us, and we did have comments from adjacent neighbors, but the specific adjacent neighbors, not anyone else.
How do you handle concerns of neighbors who are afraid to submit comments to the DCD for whatever reason, perhaps maybe because of fear of applicant
How
reprisals?
could we know that?
Okay. So in other words, you don't see it as a duty to examine the impacts on the other neighbors' parcels as well, maybe reach out to them.
Well, the way that the roadway is oriented, the direct adjacent neighbor of the subject that you showed a couple of plants, the driveway turns well before that. I don't think that the lights might even impact them. But again, we can't require and buffer something that we aren't told that they have a concern. This happens in SEPA all the time, where we have large subdivisions, but a neighbor says nothing. They have every opportunity to say, "I'd like a condition for us for a solid board fence so that I don't see headlights coming in from subdivision activity." And that happens all the time. We have people say, "I am really concerned about light coming onto my property from a subdivision and a roadway." But this is not this is not a public traveled road. It's a private driveway. It's
So,
not, right? So,
clarify, yeah.
and nor is this a large lot, where in a large lot we would require perimeter buffers. But this property was not created through a large lot subdivision that would require or may require perimeter buffers. In this particular case, it's property created long, long ago. And however it was created, there's no dedicated buffers that are required on the entirety of this property.
Okay, so let me ask the question from a different direction, I guess, just to make sure that I'm clear on this. If a neighbor who does not comment but plants rows of trees, like in an after fact like this, alongside to protect themselves, even if they don't comment, is that planting credited towards mitigation on the applicant's parcel? In other words, do you consider them good to go since they planted trees of their own on their side?
Well, that would not be applicable. If they're planting trees on their own side, it's no one's business but theirs. It's their plantings. If that's the case, there is no accreditation nor requirement to buffer on your own property. So, that's a totally different matter. It's up to them.
So after the fourth review information request that we had seen in A26, there was no revised site plan, but you did opt, as you mentioned, after discussing it with colleagues, to publish the SEPA determination that month.
Yeah, I guess.
Does SEPA?
I don't know what A26 is. Could you say
Oh,
what
I'm sorry. Yeah,
A26
A26.
is? I don't need to see it. It's just, oh, okay.
This is the information request. So this is I'll pull it up for you really quickly. So this is the information request from that month that was asking for please revise the site plan to show SEPA required functional screening buffers. And
Again, that's
then
a perfect, per again, a perfect world. Yes,
yes,
right.
okay. But you had issued the SEPA determination anyway at that point. Does SEPA require that the extent of a proposal be completely known before a decision can be rendered?
Can you say that again?
So, SEPA generally, does it require that the extent of a proposal be known before a decision can be rendered?
Well, that was the thing that was unclear. So, which is precisely why we required that buffer adjacent to the easement. The easement wasn't going to be exercised. And if whether or not the appellant and Northwest property owner was ever going to use that easement, then I guess that would be up to them to put a new headlight glare onto their own property, right? So it's like, okay, then since the one of the comments was in relation to a concern about light glare coming from the driveway, That's why we added that as a condition. And so a condition is required to be implemented. And so it will be an inspection item. It has a specification. It has, the entirety of its specification is provided in our land use code under Title 17, which is why we implemented use of substantive authority and then suggested that well required that buffer be reestablished there and then in the north property.
Okay. This is we're looking at A60 now, an email from Jeff Smith
Okay.
to you guys. We had already seen this earlier, just bringing it up to refresh your memory. The applicant continued to resist providing this documentation at this point. Is that fair to say?
But I guess so, yeah.
Okay. Then going to A26 again. We were just looking at. Again, I'll blow this up for all of our bad eyes. So the DCD issued another information request almost immediately. Sought the site plans to show the SEPA required buffers. Who on the DCD staff noticed at this juncture? Because you'll see this here in Cecilia's. I don't Cecilia Olson's, Miss Olson's, sorry, requested for information. Who was it that noticed that the site plans were inconsistent about the development of the easement? Was that something you'd noticed? Is something Ms. Olson
Well,
noticed?
we all noticed it.
Okay.
Sure.
Was it? But there were a point here where two or three of these information requests were all asking for the same thing, essentially clarifying the site plan if the road was going to be on there or not. I mean, was the DCD just trying to help us along by saying, hey, if the road's not there, get it off of there so we can move on with this? And was that the intent, essentially?
I can't speak for the entirety of staff, but that's obviously my request in the information request,
Okay.
so I can't speak to everyone, but
Okay, we're going to continue moving forward here. I want to get through this. We don't have too many more emails to look at. So we're looking at an email from the applicant, Clint Edwards, in response to the SEPA decision. And he indicates it's good news, SEPA decision is out. But you had also at this point sent him the information request we had just looked at. In other words, revise the site plans and so forth. And you must have had a face-to-face meeting just prior involving them and Cecilia Hugh.
I wasn't in the face to face, so I have no
You
idea who he
okay?
met. I have no idea.
Do you have any recollection of what Mr. Edwards might be referring to when he said the county has decided to no longer live up to our agreement?
I have no idea what that means.
So there was no verbal agreement
I
that DCD
don't know.
has
Ask
brought.
him. I have no idea.
Understood. All right, moving on to A63. Yeah, definitely was. Let me make sure I get this in the right place. It must be something huge further on down. 2 weeks later, the applicant emailed again to essentially push back a little bit on this information request. This one, I believe, was at Cecilia Olson. At this point, the applicant was indicating that their site plan was correct and was pointing out that the site plan did indeed have the easement approved development, and he put these magenta circles around the areas where it had been approved. So was it your understanding at this point that the applicant was indeed going to move forward with the development of the easement, and did that cause any confusion?
Well, it didn't for me because we've already, required that even if that easement's used, that it would be required to have a functional buffer. That is still the case. So we have that buffer area. That's a condition of the SEPA decision. and that is required to be implemented.
Okay.
So whether or not that road was used later, but in relation to SEPA, we've already provided the required condition in the SEPA decision. If somebody doesn't want to do a related enhancement that's required in SEPA, then they can appeal the SEPA decision. So if the applicant didn't like it, they could appeal the SEPA decision as well.
Certainly, certainly. Were you hearing different things verbally from the applicant than what you were receiving from them in written form?
I rarely talk to the applicant.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Examiner, can I ask a clarifying question here? Is there, I guess I'm confused as to the relevancy of this discussion. It seems to be going towards the applicant's just overall goals for this project, which I don't really see as relevant here. We're still just talking about compliance with code. And so I know that it'd be lovely to go through every single email that's ever been sent, but I'm not sure exactly what the relevancy of that would be.
If I can respond,
Sure.
what we're seeing in this narrative, it directly impacts the SEPA decision, and that's where we're headed here. So this background was necessary to understand where we ended up in the end with the conditions that we see in the decision.
All right. And I think I kind of alluded to this before, Mr. Clemenson. I mean, the intransigence of the applicant or the fact they're trying to hide things or anything like that. I mean, it's only tangentially relevant to what Mr. Heacock does, unless you establish that Mr. Heacock, based his SEPA determination on what he was told by the applicant, and it was likely that the applicant misinformed him. And so far, we haven't seen any of that directly yet. And we've spent, I think, the bulk of this, appeal on the moves and counter moves of the applicants, and it doesn't seem to be getting us anywhere yet. So, at some point, I'd like to see how that affects the SEPA decision, is what I'm
Okay.
saying. And because I hate to be spending 10 hours of testimony on something that's going to make no difference in the decision here, if you understand my meaning. So.
I
Yeah, if
understand.
we can. Yeah, I mean, like I've said before, I'm focused on what are the impacts of this proposal, how they were mitigated, how this proposal meets the permit criteria. That's pretty much it. If the applicants are horrible, bad people, for the most part, I really don't care unless it affects those issues. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to the validity of the decision. So, and I
And it
think
does,
you kind of understand that, but
it doesn't matter to us either. I mean, we're trying to tie this all back to the SEPA decision in the end.
okay, all right. But yeah, just I'd like to see it get there at some point. So, all
Okay,
right, go ahead.
outstanding. All right, so we're skipping ahead now. And this email exchange, Mr. Heacock, you received an email from Mr. Edwards more recently. This was November or October, I believe. You received an email from Mr. Edwards. Might have been, I'm going to get here. Yeah, it was in October. And you responded to Mr. Edwards in red text in on it
Okay.
because there was a lot to unpack here. And, we're not going to touch on many more emails here, but we're going to unpack this email because I think it really helps us get to what went into the SEPA decision. And that's what we're trying to understand here. This was the applicant responding to the revised acceptance letter. So this would have been the second decision that went out. It was later withdrawn and revised a third time. But SEPA was standing at this point. Again, your response is in red text. There is one area down below where it didn't make it in red text, but we can illuminate that.
Oh.
So the applicant suggests in the first paragraph that the impacts for one northern neighbor were already addressed by when that neighbor built a solid fence, and you don't respond to
Oh,
that.
okay.
Does SEPA credit an after-the-fact applicant for measures, again, taken by the neighbors to stop impacts on
No.
their own properties?
No, not if they made a comment that they were concerned about headlights. And that particular property is directly in the path of where headlight traffic exiting the Edwards property would be. They made a comment in relation to the notice of application. And so we implemented the requirement for the Edwards to plant site obscuring vegetation on Edwards property in their control in relation to. And supplemental to their own fence, whether or not they built the fence to keep dogs or cats or whatever on their property. That's, you know, when we use SEPA substantive authority, it's required to be implemented. And so it will be a requirement for that to be replanted and inspected and monitoring for it as well, probably a bond. That's typical for landscaping. So it's required. I don't know why you are poking around that it's not going to be required. We required it for specific areas for a specific reason in relation to the light issue with headlights. And so that's what we did. It's pretty simple.
Okay. Is the fence itself a requirement?
No.
No. Okay. So in the second paragraph, the applicant states that the complaining neighbors to the north bought their home after the conversion, essentially implying that the feedback should be nullified because they knew the impacts already. You did not respond to this. What does SEPA say about the ownership timelines of adjacent parcels?
That doesn't matter. We issued a notice of application. There's a specific answer to that particular notice of application that we received from specific neighbors requesting, and that made sense in relation to that north neighbor, the one north neighbor. Whether or not they did their own fence, that's their own personal matter. It's not required. And when you look at the specification of the planting, the rural planting specification, it does not require additional fencing. If an applicant neighbor chooses to put up their own fence, more power to them. But our requirement is for the adjacent buffer in control of the applicant and not for offsite.
So the applicant continues in this paragraph to express concern that the screening buffers not be protected by covenant. You agreed that you see no need for a covenant in these buffers. How are neighbors to be assured that the applicants or their heirs, especially their heirs, after the conclusion of the monitoring period, simply don't remove these buffers willfully or just out of ignorance?
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's a SEPA substantive authority matter. It requires it to be bonded. After all of this minutia of the permit, of permit requirements, I highly doubt that anyone is going to mess with that vegetation. But as far as it a matter of a notice to title, we take the notice to title in relation to critical areas is only for high hazard slopes. There is no other requirement for requiring a notice to title for a future property owner. There is recourse in relation to use of a Form 17, I believe it's Form 17, when there's a home sale where you would be notified that you have certain constraints on your property, you have certain conditions, things like that. So that particular item in relation to notice to title, we wouldn't necessarily implement that. It seemed to be a concern that wasn't necessary. We didn't deem that necessary.
Okay. So in the phrase screen already there, in other words, the applicant's talking about not just the tree, 8 to 10 trees they planted, but the screen that already existed. In other words, survivors of the clearing, surviving trees up there at the north. And you know that it's some of it is kind of straggly, some of it is a bit thicker. You respond that this vegetation does not qualify as SEPA required screening rows. Is this true for both the north boundary and also the northwest boundary as well?
Well, we can. I just know that we conditioned the permit for that one interior property in the north and your adjacent property on the northwest. Those were the conditions. There's no other conditions in relation to a buffer requirement.
So this, what I'm highlighting was supposed to be in red as well. So if you're following the email, that this is just for just to make sure there's no confusion.
Oh, okay.
This is where the
could be is, just yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, it's just it's fine. The voice changes, and we can see that. So in that non-red text that I've highlighted, you state to the applicant the following: the point of a SEPA decision was to limit impacts that you created and to mitigate for rural enjoyment for that neighbor should they consider selling. Can you clarify what you mean with the phrase, should they consider selling?
I don't know. I don't know what I meant.
Okay. In the middle of the third paragraph, I'm going to scroll on down here. The applicant states that the parcel is being treated differently from others in the South Worth area. That don't need screening. You respond that the buffers are needed because this is a code compliance land use action requiring SEPA consideration along with possible future farm buildings. You touched on this earlier, but considering the reasoning behind your answer, why aren't screening buffers required to protect more of the surrounding residences?
It's not needed. There's no requirement for it in our code. There's nothing that says you are required to have a perimeter buffer on your rural property.
Do the impacts only exist on the properties with the landowners who explicitly follow these after-the-fact permits and complain?
We have a complaint-based county in Kitsap County. We don't have co-compliance people driving around looking for things. That is that's the flavor of Kitsap County. And so, in relation to rural character buffers, if there's a complaint and a related SEPA decision, then we're going to implement specific recommendations for those that are complaining. If someone's not complaining, then we assume they're good to go. They've been there. The Edwards have been there. The cutting happened in 2019, I think. Maybe it was, I don't know. I'm not sure when it happened, but
too long,
right? So we would have heard about it if someone had a concern. They would have raised a flag at some point. It's very easy to make a complaint. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call 360-337-5777. Call, and it's Kitsap One. They answer the phone. They're very good. You just say, I have a complaint on my neighbor. And I'd like someone to investigate this. And guess what happens? It gets investigated. That happens every time. And that's our code compliance procedure.
Okay. SEPA, we're not looking at, I guess these questions are not coming from the perspective of code compliance. Because it could potentially involve a new proposal. Where in SEPA code is there a rule stating that only the squeaky wheel gets the grease?
In relation to rural property owners, unless someone had a large lot subdivision that required buffers and they got into the buffers, or they have wetlands that encroached into buffers, we don't know. Again, it's a complaint-based county, so we wouldn't know unless a neighbor pointed it out or unless a landowner had said, oh, I did this. I'm not sure if I should have done that. But the rectification in relation to wetlands or other matters are all based on whether or not there's a co-compliance case.
Okay. All right, we're going to skip down. I'm going to skip some stuff here. I just have a couple more questions in this and we can move on. The applicant states in the final paragraph here that the western buffering should not be required and that they would revise their site plan in order to avoid any buffering in this area. What changes could they have made to the site plan to accomplish the removal of that SEPA required buffer?
What SEPA required buffer?
We're talking about the one to the west.
There's no SEPA required west buffer item other than on the
northwest.
The northwest. Yeah.
Okay, so okay. On the western boundary, we're talking about the same thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So in other words, where the applicant says additional buffers and covenants should not be required, we will change our permit site plan accordingly to prevent such requirements. What changes could the applicants have made to remove that northwest buffer?
I guess can I just ask a clarifying question here? I'm not sure. Are we going into speculation as to what the project could have looked like? I guess I'm not sure what the relevance is.
Well, I mean, we've got an interesting situation here where Mr. Edwards has testified that there is no northwest SEPA required buffer. And we're hearing here that there is a northwest required SEPA buffer in this testimony. So I'm trying to get, I'm trying to reconcile where there is confusion here.
Well, I'd suggest that he doesn't say will, he says should not be. Sorry, it's required. I mean, it's required. Okay. It's a condition, it's a SEPA condition. So that would have been, again, his ability to appeal that SEPA decision. We're requiring it. It's a condition of approval of the site development activity permit. So I can't address any other speculation. He's inquiring, and fair. So I'm fair. Answering.
Fair. All right, let's get back to the DNS. Let's get back to the heart of this. In the conditions, you cite Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan.
Uh-huh.
You state this proposal is reviewed under the 2016 Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan. The project will be conditioned to the following rural character guidelines. And you've been illuminating a bit for this just now in your answers recently. Do you commonly cite the land use policies related to rural areas and other areas in your SEPA determinations?
No, not something like this. Typically not.
Okay, so this one is unusual in this regard.
It would be implemented for someone that had a 10-acre parcel that had that was zoned rural residential and were requesting a large lot subdivision. So then we would examine the large lot subdivision, look to adjacent neighbors, and then we would implement this code. This is why we implemented this tracking to the comprehensive plan, because we have more weight when we implement substantive authority. And this is the mechanism to implement substantive authority, to require a specific rural character buffer, which we implemented based on concerns about adjacent neighbors, specific adjacent neighbors. I would assume the rest of, that's it.
That's right. Okay, fair enough. So just to confirm, KCC 18.04200, KCC 17.430.010. Do they both support the notion that these land use policies can and should inform your review in this case?
Yeah.
All right, we are going to get on here to some substance related to this decision. A77 is what we're going to see next. This is a map of the downtown core of Southworth. Are you seeing that? Yes.
Uh-huh.
How familiar are you with the core area of Southworth surrounding the ferry terminal?
I'm generally familiar with Southworth and the ferry, the new passenger only ferry, certainly all of that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Are you aware that this proposal will create not only the largest agricultural operations in the core Southworth neighborhood, but also represent one of the only such operations of any size in that location without mature buffers of vegetation between its livestock pastures and directly adjacent home sites?
Am I supposed to respond to that?
I mean, are you aware of the size and scale of this?
I don't see this being a size and scale problem whatsoever.
Okay. Land Use Policy 54 seeks, quote, and you, I believe you quote this one in your CEPA decision, to preserve rural character of the county, emphasize controlling rural development, assuring visual compatibility of rural development with the surrounding rural area. Is that correct? I mean, you recognize that? Okay.
Yeah.
Your CEPA decision solely quotes the portion that states, quote, to preserve the rural character of the county. I'll go back.
Yeah.
So we're looking at this line right here. To preserve the rural character of the county, emphasize controlling rural development. But you omit the second clause, which is assuring visual compatibility of rural development with the surrounding area.
Okay.
Was there any particular reason for that, or truncation, or is it just saving space?
The surrounding area is you and the neighbor to the north. When we're dealing with substantive authority, these are the matters that have been brought to our attention, what we addressed in the CEPA decision. That is the intent of using that part of the code.
So since the applicant's parcel does not abut more than 15 feet of county road in its southeast corner, are the neighboring residences experiencing the proposal's aesthetic and other impacts directly along its perimeter? I mean, either now or in the future?
Which direction?
I mean, so let's go back and look at the, so in other words, since the only, abutting of a county road is down here in the far southeastern corner, they're surrounded by other residential lots. In other words, this parcel is not surrounded by a bunch of streets. So you've got a bunch of direct adjacent
sure.
neighbors.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
Could these neighboring residences experience proposals aesthetic or other impacts, either now or in the future?
Well, they were in the 800-foot radius. We received no comment from anyone else around other than the direct neighbor to the north and from the northwest corner. So I don't know what the point is.
Okay. So in other words, if you're not
we have a specific code compliance problem that we're addressing in a site development activity permit. It's the correct permit. We have the mitigation that we believe will alleviate the concerns of those provided in a notice of application. So we provided that feedback and required conditions. There will be required inspections that go with those conditions, specific to those that contacted us or that had provided a co-compliance call or whatever. So,
okay. So for instance, if the owner of this parcel to the southeast, which are the only agricultural operations, neighboring Edwards, plants rows of fir trees along the edge, but doesn't let you know that they've done it or the reason or complain of that. In other words, they're ineligible for conditioning on the applicant's parcel themselves.
I don't even understand that. You mean they put Mr. trees on their own property? So,
Mr. Kammer, can I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
I'm just a little bit confused as to what the relevancy of this discussion is. Right now, we seem to be going through the statutory authority to develop CEPA decisions or decisions for the county. I'm not sure exactly what this is relevant to this action whatsoever.
I think we'll find in the opening briefs for both the county and the applicants that the argument was made that the land use policies are not even applicable here and that Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan should not apply to this decision. So this is in response to that.
Okay. And it, well, I think it kind of it's an ask and answer kind of situation too, Mr. Clemenson, where you have already asked Mr. Heacock about if a neighbor puts up their own trees, does that disqualify them from mitigation, or does that count toward credit towards the mitigation? And Mr. Heacock is just doesn't appear to have any response to that, actually.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to move on to just one more of the land use policies, Mr. Gillen. We've got one left, and then we're going to move off the comprehensive plan. And this is actually a point of confusion for the community, Mr. Heacock. So perhaps you can answer this one for us. Land use policy 13 indicates that the county is obligated to examine the health and equity impacts of land use decisions to all populations. If the newly prevailing winds from the loss of the forest canopy blow animal allergens directly into the front of a neighbor's home that has severe animal allergies, does land use policy 13 not apply to protect that neighbor?
Well, if something is in relation to livestock use, if someone has a livestock allergy, there is a clause in county code. I couldn't tell you where it is, to be honest, but there is, it might be under 17455, where people have a right to farm. And if they have a right to farm, then there would be a mechanism for implementing the right to farm. The Edwards, from my understanding and visual observation, have had farm animals on their property. I don't know if they have goats anymore. I think they have chickens, or maybe they don't anymore. I don't know.
Does SEPA not protect a neighboring human being with severe allergies to a proposed use?
Not in relation to farm activities.
Okay. Thank you. All right, let's move on. We've just got a very briefly to the farm plan, because you mentioned that it is it does guide the buffering. F23 is the one we're going to bring up, and I believe that is the map. Yes, so we're looking at Helen Jones's map that she supplied along with the farm plan. I don't believe I need to pull up the entire farm plan. That's exhibit, that's a different exhibit. But you'd originally cited 17455 and 10 as the code requesting this. The boundary of the size of this buffer you see in the northwest, that's what you've been referring to as what is required by SEPA, correct?
Generally, yeah.
Okay.
There's a specific spec. I don't know if that has a measurement. I'm not sure.
Okay. Okay. No waste storage facility location or size is described on this. The applicant's plan shows that livestock will be placed directly on the property lines. And so the concern, of course, is that there might be manure uncovered or whatnot right on the property lines. The slaughter component is unanswered, for instance, as well. I mean, if the farm plan is a regulatory requirement to account for 17455, are any of these vagaries expected to be conditioned up front?
Vagaries?
Yeah, in other words, if there's no knowledge of how waste will be handled, future livestock, if waste will end up between the buffer and the property lines, for instance, how does that get accounted for here?
Well, in 17455, there are recommendations for waste storage structures. Any farm building or agricultural building that has manure handling or that type of thing requires 50-foot separation and 100-foot separation for adjacent occupied buildings. So that's the general thesis, if you will, in the code that we have to implement. The farm management plan would be way more specific once farming activities are going to occur, I don't know where we're going. We don't know that they're farming. We would recommend that they get a farm plan. There's no requirement for them to get a farm management plan. And again, it would be a compliance-based, complaint-based situation if somebody were to locate a farm building under that specification in 17455 to place that building in a place other than the requirement of that particular code. So a neighbor would say, I'm concerned about flies or odor or whatever. And if it's 50 feet away or greater from that property line, they are actually compliant. So, but I, again, this is, we're getting into speculation land. I don't know what the Edwards intend to do. I know that they intend, if this permit gets issued, to implement the things that we have provided as conditions. So you might want to ask them. I don't know.
All right, that's enough of the farm plan at this point. We might come back to it depending on if we got some questions later that might need some clarification. You've mentioned a lot about the intake of comments, and there were a lot of comments for this, as you mentioned. There was a community-based comments. Did you handle the comments differently when you interpreted this permit as existing at the SDAP 1 level?
We didn't. We generally looked at those comments that we received. Most of them were just about concern about clear cutting. And so, you know, addressing that comment again, the speculation here, and I'll re-relay that particular, why are we talking about it? That particular SEPA decision was rescinded because we realized that we had the wrong permit type. We wanted to properly notice this project for adjacent neighbors to be able to provide comment. And we got an adjacent neighbor to provide comment after the NOA went out. So that was great.
Yeah. The reason why the comments come up in a little bit different context here, I think, is because it's an after the fact, which you know, you end up having neighbors and community members who are familiar with these properties trying to report conditions on the parcel prior to, you know, the conversion and so forth, and have concerns about that. Some of the feedback that was sent from you in the community, and these are exhibits 81 and 82. If you recall, Mr. Heacock, these were the large submissions with data DVDs and so forth that came in. I don't know if you recall those. A lot of that was formatted to expose accuracy issues with the SEPA checklist. And then in A48, I'm going to pull this up and make sure everybody can read this. So this was a response to the lead appellant to me, and a number of other DCD staff were on here. And you responded essentially about the concerns about the SEPA checklist.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so essentially the community tried to put in a preemptive community response. It was submitted in website form. You indicated to us you couldn't take it in website form. It had to be submitted physically. So it was submitted physically, which is what became exhibits A81, 82, and 83, which those data DVDs.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Much of that information, of course, now ended up in this appeal. You suggested at the time that you would not evaluate this material because it falls outside the typical method and timeline of review for a permit. Did you deem it unhelpful that the community was trying to submit impact evidence up front since this was an after-the-fact permit?
Well, I think the point here, and this again is, if you ask me, water over the bridge. Again, these materials were provided. The SEPA checklist was provided. Again, those are a snapshot in time from a snapshot provided by an applicant who is trying their best. I think they did an okay job of filling a checklist out. I've seen checklists where it says NA on pretty much everything. So those would be ones where I would seek additional information. In this case, in relation to wildlife concerns, most of the comments were about clear cutting. And clear cutting, you know, in this estimation of 3.75 or whatever acres is not significant in relation to tree removal. And I'm sorry to say that, but it is not, it's not a significant matter. But what is significant is the fact that we had a wetland that got encroached in, the wetland buffer was encroached. And then we had concerns from neighbors about headlight glare. And we have concerns about wind that's on the property, dust blowing on a gravel driveway. So I don't know what else to say in relation to the SEPA decision.
So this is
a moot point, if you ask me.
Okay. So were these materials not helpful? In other words, for the review process, essentially.
I reviewed for all the matters that I could mitigate for in relation to concerns that were addressed or that were posited. But I can't stop wind blowing in relation to SEPA. So I can't stop wind blowing on a gravel driveway. Could the applicant oil the driveway? That wouldn't be very good. Could they pave the driveway? Yes, they could pave the driveway. It would not be a matter for additional impervious surface, I don't think. It's census urbanized, so maybe it would. But, you know, a gravel driveway and a gravel surface and a landowner that is on his tractor mowing or things like that are, you know, those kinds of things are part of every single property. I mean, you have a spot on your property that's open, you know, that had been previously cleared. And so if that's regenerated with tree plantings and things like that, that'd be fine. I mean, that's up to you to do that. But this particular applicant chose that they want the additional pastures. They've left, you know, shade trees in the center, things like that. The specifics of the comments and the specifics of SEPA, and the fact is we've got a estimate of what the landowner thought would be impacts and how he might be addressing impacts in a SEPA checklist is just a teeny piece of the puzzle of what we do to review an overall application. So again, I don't know where this gets us to talk about the previous SEPA decision. What we have before us is a grading permit. It's conditioned. SEPA is conditioned. We have conditions on the permit. And we've attempted to address the impacts that are in control.
Okay. I don't have much more on this. Did you note at the time that these large submissions were a collective one from 20 to 30 community members?
I have no idea who was involved.
Were their names not on them?
You do. If their names aren't on them, how would I know? I have 27 individual comments that I'm aware of. I think maybe it's more. I don't know if I counted very well or not.
It's in the vicinity. I think it's 29, but that's fine.
Oh, okay.
So is it? See, just one more question. This you've mentioned the county's policy and the SEPA. Does SEPA have any consideration about the viability of concerns from people living in the vicinity? In other words, if they're just one parcel removed from the project site, but not directly adjacent to it, does SEPA say anything about the viability of their comments?
SEPA in relation to rectifying a violation would be more specific to the adjacent neighbors and not someone that does not live right nearby.
Okay. You've mentioned this a couple of times.
And then we felt that it could be addressed by the applicant, then certainly we would then look to that. And we might ask for clarification, but in this case, both of the adjacent neighbors that were concerned about headlight glare had commented about headlight glare. And so we implemented the decision for those specific neighbors that addressed headlight glare by implementing substantive authority.
Okay, so if this were a, you've mentioned a couple of times, several times actually, I think, about the fact that this is a an after the fact compliance case. And so I guess my question is this, if this was a proposal still to happen, would the concerned individuals, say two parcels away, would their comments then be integrated into more of your decision?
That's speculation. I have no idea. I don't know.
Okay. So, well, let me ask it this way. So when you're issuing a SEPA decision on a proposal, that's still to happen. Are you still concerned primarily with mitigating the direct neighbors and not people that say live, a parcel or two away?
Well, again, that's speculation. I don't know. It would depend. Where is it? Where are the adjacent neighbors? Do they have a concern? That kind of thing.
Okay. Only one more on this. Were you aware that the tree removal
is we were just at one more. So now we're doing
No, this is the one more group. This is one more here. Yeah.
Okay. I guess,
you're good.
Can I, Mr. Clemson, can I ask a clarifying question then?
Yeah.
Are these also continue to be questions about SEPA? I think there's plenty of resources out there for you to discover what SEPA does and doesn't qualify. I don't know that this is a good use of Mr. Hecox's time.
All right. Well, no, I'll overrule that. I think Mr. Clemenson is kind of investigating. I mean, one of the standards for this review is to make sure that the SEPA review was adequate and considered all environmental impacts. And Mr. Clemenson is trying to figure out what Mr. Hecox investigated, what he believes he had to investigate. And, I mean, comments that SEPA is complaint-based and you just look at what neighbors complain about is a interesting response to that. So I'm going to allow Mr. Clemenson to continue.
Understood.
I think the appellant's response to that, Your Honor, is the same. Incidentally, were you aware that the tree removal in this action was visible from the ferry's dock at the South Rift Terminal?
I have no idea.
Did you contact any of the interested parties directly? Seeking more information.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Okay. You didn't follow up with the names listed on those. Well, you just indicated you didn't see the names on those submissions. So in other words, you did not conduct investigations on neighboring parcels to corroborate the after-the-facts impacts being reported by the community?
Oh, well, I think that I generally tried to figure out where people were. I'll give you an example. Here's the interested parties list. It says Bartos, R. Webster, Blau, J. Lee, Clemenson. So obviously I know where they are, but there was no real address provided from them. It was, there's Bush, Hardy, Humphreys, Fort. No okay. indication from any of them. Oh, I live at blah blah blah, whatever.
Okay. So in other words, is it just for our usefulness in the future, is it helpful if every comment have the address listed on it? Hey, I live at
helpful. We typically ask for that in any SEPA comment, if they could provide their address, what their concern is, that type of thing. And please provide the permit number so that we don't have to try to speculate where that particular property is. So, yes, those things are general guidance.
All right.
I think the notice of application says that too.
Okay. At any point in your review, did you consider how the impacts of the applicant's possible timber trespass were compounding the impacts coming from the applicant's own parcel?
I don't understand timber trespass. I didn't believe that the applicant had cut someone else's trees.
Okay. During the normal process of review, how do you obtain from the DCD's internal file systems all the public comments submitted to the county for your SEPA consideration?
Oh, yeah. Well, we review them. We review the SEPA comments, sure.
Do they all live in the case file for the permit or somewhere else?
I think they're electronically in the permit itself.
Okay. Who generally maintains that case or permit file?
The clerk of the hearing examiner typically.
Okay. What would happen if comments never make it into the case file? Do you see that happening occasionally?
That would be unusual if someone commented and it wasn't recorded. If I get a comment, I ship it right over to the clerk of the hearing examiner. And then they say, I've got it, thank you. And I'll respond to them. And that's typically what happens.
Okay. Were you aware that the community had been, had there been any discussion, had you heard in any of your DCD, from any of your DCD colleagues, that complaints had come in to Ms. Olson, Amanda Walson, Director Rennick, throughout 2023, that the case file was missing community comments for this permit?
I have no idea.
Okay. I'm going to go back to the DNS F26. So we, in this comment section down here, I think it's what we're going to be going to.
Yep.
So between the 28 interested parties, there were 29 comments received before or during the SEPA determination. Some of those have come in at the first determination. Some came in at the NOA later on. Not including all the collective community feedback that was submitted in those massive DVDs and so forth that we were just talking about. Is it typical for a final SEPA determination to not quantify or respond more specifically to this amount of feedback?
This is typical.
Okay. And of course, there's no staff report. So, in this type of permit, so there's no response to them there, correct?
Yeah, it's conditions.
Okay. So you state here in the determination that 6 new comments were received during the notice of application period in October, mm-hmm. November 2023. Is that accurate?
Six related to the NOA, date. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. In records request in November 2023, and just for everybody's knowledge, P007228, I'm not going to share it, but essentially a public records was put in, you know, how you can request the case file and all the information on a permit when these notice of applications go out. And so that was done by a community member. That response yielded 6 recorded comments, likely the ones that you referred to here. If you are indicating 6 comments were received, is it likely that those were the 6 that you had seen in the case or permit file at that time?
These are related to when the NOA went out, when we had this specific permit.
Correct.
We did review the previous interested party, questions, et cetera, and so forth. So we reviewed those. Yeah.
Okay. So 4 months later, the DCD staff realized that there was a case file error, and turns out there was a total sum of 14 comments from the notice of application period. And they updated their records response with community. In other words, the records folks realized that they had sent out an incomplete response, which they don't want to get fined for, obviously. So they opened that up and updated it. And these missing comments are included as exhibits between A111 and A122. I'm not going to pull them all up. Judging
Were they provided in the permit?
They were sent into either a combination of Ms. Olson or to you or straight to Amanda Walson. I think there was a combination of them.
There may be an assemblage. Yeah, that could be.
Judging from your answer, your previous answers, I think I may already know the answer to this, but were you among the staff trying to find all these comments the following April and get that case file corrected?
I don't recall being involved in that. That's not usually my bag.
Yeah. Got it. So I'm taking it you didn't freshly analyze these newly recorded comments after the DNS was already issued?
Are these new comments? This is the first I've heard of this.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to skip down. So CEPA requires the county, of course, show that its review of the proposal is thorough and accurate. Of the 28 individuals listed as interested parties or commenters, not a single one spoke in support of the proposal. You've mentioned clear cutting, but had you noticed that a common request amongst these was for screening buffers around the whole perimeter of the violated area?
Are they the neighbors?
No, they were a mixture of everybody.
I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. And once again, with no case file there's available, is there any other analysis available from the county showing what you did looking through the comments, saying, okay, I've seen this comment, this is how we're, you know, is there any documentation of that analysis?
I don't typically do that, no.
Okay. All right, let's jump to the heart of this matter. I mean, a lot of this that we've been going over has been the meta aspects of this, but let's talk about the impacts, and that's why we're here.
I really wouldn't mind a break if.
Oh, excellent!
We got 3 minutes to go. Take it now. That's fine.
That's all good.
We'll see you at 3:45 then.
Thank you.